Hello and welcome to the About Greyhounds podcast. I'm your host, Jacqueline Howard. This episode is sure to make you smile because that's what today's guest is renowned for. The smiles he brings, the laughter he induces, and the charitable greyhound adoption causes he supports. Many of you know him through his greyhound illustrations and penchant for creating new, but totally applicable words to the greyhound lexicon. In fact, it's fair to say that he's written and illustrated not one, but two greyhound lexicons or glossaries. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show Mr. Richard Skipworth. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Jacqueline. Nice to speak to you again.
Well, congratulations on your new book, Rich Skipworth's Greyhound Glossary Volume 2. Since the publishing of the first book, your fans, including me, have been eagerly awaiting its release.
it's finally hit print, and it's going okay at the moment. Yeah, it took me about... I was wondering whether to do one or not, and then basically I gave in to public opinion because there's so many people kept on at me to... Do volume two, and I had loads of cartoons I hadn't actually sort of published yet. So I thought, well, yeah, I'll just go for it and see what happens. And it's been welcomed with open arms, I'm pleased to say.
Well, yeah, and yeah, I for one am thrilled that you came out with this second book because it is so funny. It's delightful. The illustrations are perfect. We all see our greyhounds.
Much.
Doing these things, so I'm glad that you did. I'm one of the legions of fans, so I hope this doesn't hurt your feelings, Rich, but the first topic I want to cover isn't exactly about you. Please tell us who is Magic and how he's doing.
I'm used to people asking about Magic rather than me, really, because basically I just function as his publicity officer now he's become world famous. Magic is my greyhound, and we've had him for about 4 or 5 years now. He's the fourth greyhound we've had, and he's actually the biggest one we've had as well. He's weighs about 80 pounds, something like that.
Wow.
And he's very tall. And when we first got him, we weren't sort of quite clear about exactly how tall he actually was, how big he was, because when we got him from the kennels, there was like nothing to compare him with. But when we got him home, we found he could comfortably just stick his chin on the work surface in the kitchen. And we realised how big he actually was then. But he's lovely. He's probably the most vocal greyhound we've ever had. He's quite an accomplished barker, and he's really good at letting you know where he is and when he wants feeding and all sorts of stuff like that. He's definitely a sort of in-your-face greyhound rather than a shy, retiring type. That's who Magic is, and my cartoons are really him. They're, it's all stuff that he does, and I just wait till he does something stupid and then I draw it. And makes the whole process of thinking up ideas quite easy, really, because you just hang around till he does something, which isn't very long, really. That's Magic. That's who he is. And the representation of him in the cartoons is roughly to scale when you see him in the cartoon of me. So you can judge for yourselves the actual size.
Well, it's funny because I came across on your Facebook page the other day a photo of him laying across your lap, and he's enormous.
Yeah. He's really good at just basically stopping your circulation in your entire body. You'll just lie there he'll lie there all day if you actually were sat on the settee. He takes up the entire sofa, really.
Okay, let's talk about your new book. Like your first, Volume 2 showcases a variety of newly coined greyhound words and phrases. So do you make these up yourself, or are any suggested to you?
Generally speaking, yeah, most of them I think up myself. Some people will send in suggestions of ideas for greyhound behaviour and stuff. I found a lot of the time I've already done them. A lot of the time they refer to sort of unpleasant bodily functions of greyhounds and other behaviour, which isn't... I'm trying to make them look funny and appealing rather than biological. Some people have a different sense of humour to me, I think.
Right.
But now and then I get the odd suggestion which I haven't thought of, and I use that. But I usually wind up thinking of the actual word myself. Example of that would be, there's a cartoon I did, I think Volume 1, which is called Glopping.
Right.
Which is that horrible sound that they greyhounds tend to make when they're just washing themselves in the middle of the night. And it goes on for hours. It certainly does in this house. And that was suggested to me by a lady called Lisa Scott, who came and saw me the other day, all the way from New Zealand, which I was amazed at. And glopping seemed to be the appropriate word for that, because that's exactly what it sounds like.
You're exactly right. That is what it sounds like. And like you said, it's the middle of the night and it goes on forever, no matter what you say.
Four in the morning, normally, is Magic's glopping time. And I have to shout at him to shut up then, just because I can get back to sleep. It doesn't always work. But mostly I think of all the stuff myself, yeah.
Okay. So when I see your cartoons, I find myself laughing out loud. Do you ever laugh at your own cartoons and text?
I may have the occasional chuckle, though, really. But it's a bit of a strange business in here, in a room on your own, trying to be funny. You tend not to sort of laugh out loud unless you're suffering mental problems, I think. You get a sort of sense of satisfaction when you know you've nailed it, really, and you kind of have a sly, smug chuckle to yourself, and that's about it, I think. Don't do the laughing out loud bit. But I'm really muttering to myself, though, with different words, and I'm sort of speaking the captions to make sure they sound right.
Right.
that's about as far as it goes. It's best if you aren't in the house when I'm working, really, because you hear all sorts of strange muttering coming out of the room.
So are there any new greyhound words that you've created but you've decided not to share publicly?
Well, actually, I thought about this, and no, there aren't really. All the ones I've thought of, I've actually done something with, I think. All my stuff is actually out there. I try and make them as appealing as possible and as acceptable as I can. Don't try and offend anybody.
But
there aren't any that I haven't actually put up yet. There's still loads more I've got to think of, I think. I'm going to carry on doing these sort of cartoons for a while. So I'll be thinking up later this week, I would think, putting some more cartoons up. I've got some more thinking to do yet.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that. That's great. So I'm going to throw some of the words and phrases you've coined in the new book, Volume 2. Yeah. I'm going to say them. You tell me what they mean. Okay? The first one, Four Paw Fandango.
Oh, that one, yeah. Yeah, that's... It's a thing... Well, a lot of greyhounds do it. But it's that thing where... they've just finished having a wee or something like that, or even if they've just been sniffing on the ground, really. They'll suddenly start this scooting, and they'll be scratching at the ground with all four paws, and generally throwing muck and mud and grass in all directions, usually at me, really. It's a cartoon where I'm bending down to pick up some poo, and sure enough, that's exactly when Magic decides to do his fandango. And just scatter muck and grass and stuff everywhere. And we've got a little Jack Russell humbug, and he tends to sort of follow Magic around a bit, so he tends to catch the full force of the fandango flinging, if he's not careful, because he's only a sort of, 1 foot high. Which is about the level where the sort of the most intense detritus gets flung. So try and move Magic around a bit so that the spray goes in other directions. But it's very tricky. it's just like a weird dance, really.
What is his name?
The little Jack Russell.
Yes.
His name's Humbug.
Humbug, okay.
Yeah.
Can we expect to see Humbug with Magic?
He does appear in the odd cartoon.
Okay, great.
Now and then. And he sort of... he's quite old now, and he's a bit deaf as well. But he's the one who's responsible for teaching Magic how to bark.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's really, really good of him, that was. When we first had Magic, he was very quiet. And there's a sort of a common myth about greyhounds, I think, that they don't bark much, or they're very quiet. And in fact, our first greyhound was very quiet. Once someone got to work on him, he's taught him the full range of vocal skills that he can employ now.
Well,
it's very noisy.
I understand completely. My greyhounds didn't bark until we took in for an emergency for 3 weeks a beagle.
Yeah.
who did nothing like most beagles but bark. That my greyhounds barked.
Yeah. Yes, they think it's great as well. I really find that amusing to make all that row.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, the next phrase, I hope I don't pronounce this wrong. If I do, please correct me. Disgruntled snudging.
It's actually, two words. There's disgruntled, which is, well, I mean, everybody knows that greyhounds are beautiful creatures. And I've come to expect people to stop and make a fuss of Magic when he's out now and tell me what a beautiful boy he is. And I get slightly miffed when they don't. And this struck me as a word I could use, and it's based on, obviously just based on disgruntled and sticking a grey in there somewhere. But yes, yeah, I've got it down as the feeling of mild annoyance resulting from people passing by and not stopping to tell you how gorgeous your hound is.
Yes, I totally.
Very often, most people do actually stop and say something, but you do get the occasional peasant who doesn't understand anything, and they get a good scowl off me as they go past.
It's true. It's true.
The other word is snudging.
Yes,
which is a combination of stealth and nudging. And, you know, greyhounds have a tendency just to sort of nudge you with their nose when they want something.
Yeah.
And Magic's got a tendency to just sneak up on you when you're not even aware that he's in the room. He'll sneak in and then just start nudging you for no apparent reason. Especially if I'm trying to... We had a nice summer here recently, and a couple of times I actually tried to go and sit out in the back garden in the sunshine and doze off. But that was a waste of time, because the greyhound would come out and sense when I was dozing off and just wake me up by sticking his nose into my arm. So that's snudging.
Snudging. Okay. The next one, the red legs of horror.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's that strange thing where they've got sort of various thin bits of skin, greyhounds have, especially on their back legs.
Yeah.
And just around like the sort of... second joint, or the middle joint of the back legs. And if the sunshine catches it just right, then they seem to glow red. And first time I saw that, I thought, oh my God, he's cut himself. it's something wrong. But then we realised it was just the sunshine shining through his skin. And a couple of times people have said to me that, what's wrong with your dog? He had an accident. And but no, it's all perfectly natural. And you don't see any other dogs really, because they've usually got a lot more fur, and greyhound's got very thin fur, so it allows the light to show through.
Right.
Also shows through in other parts of their anatomy, which I won't go into, which is even more shocking.
You know what? Another thing that alarms people when they see my greyhounds is, don't you feed your dog? That's what I hear a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had that before now.
Yeah.
He looks a bit thin, doesn't he?
Yeah, you got to feed your dog. Okay, the next one, again, I hope I say this correctly. Multigration.
Oh, multiplication.
Multiplication, okay.
It's something that's not happened to me, but I know people who it has happened to. And people, when they get one greyhound, and then they realise that, well, you know, there's plenty of room in the house, we could probably have another greyhound as well. And then they often go on to wind up with two or three then, or more.
Yes.
And one friend of mine went to see her a while ago. I think she had four, something like that. But it's that sort of the way that greyhounds tend to multiply when you've got your first one. I'd certainly like another couple, but I don't know if we've got the room. Well, we haven't got the room. It's just a matter of convincing my wife, Jill, that we've got the room. I'm working on that.
Okay, good. Okay, the next one is an acronym, the ASLB.
That's the ALSB, yeah. That's another thing magic does. Well, in fact, a lot of greyhounds do it. It stands for the annoying last-second bow down. And greyhounds do this bowing down thing. I don't know why they do it, really. They're happy, and they just sort of kind of like do it in your presence, really. Magic's got this habit of timing it, so that when you're trying to put his lead on, he'll just bow down and nip out the way of putting the lead round his collar. he'll do that more than once as well. Just right at the last second, as you're trying to get ready to go for a walk, he'll start mucking around and bowing down. Spinning round as well, he'll do that as well.
Okay. Irigami.
Oh, yeah. That's that thing with greyhound ears, where they always seem to be forever being inside out. I don't know how they do it, they sort of, you look at them and you realise that they've got one ear bent inside out, so that's a skill that only greyhounds appear to be able to do, really, with any fluency. It's in the book it's described as the skilled art of folding one's ears inside out, mastered by greyhounds over centuries and necessitating frequent corrective action by their owners, which you always feel compelled to put them straight, don't you? Even though they don't care. They walk around with their ears looking like cauliflowers all day. But I always feel like you've got to put it right. That's irigami.
So irigami is very similar to a word in your first book, which is, again, I hope I pronounce it right, ogredigami?
Ogredigami, yeah. That's the way greyhounds can fold themselves up into a tiny space, like a bed. It started off, a friend of ours, they came to stay, and they had a Staffordshire Terrier, and they brought her bed with her, and it's about half the size of Magic, really, but Magic took a bit of a like to it, and so he contrived to fold himself up into the space available. He managed to fit into it quite easily in the end, but it was amazing how he did it, really, and this gave me the idea of based on origami, which is to do and sort of combine it with greyhounds. So it's the greyhound's art of folding themselves up into small spaces. We bought him a great big bed as well, because he liked this bed so much. We thought, we can't see him curled up in that tiny bed all the time, so we bought him a great big bed. But he still insists on folding himself up, so he only takes up about half the size of the bed. Could have saved ourselves a fortune on that bed. There you go.
Okay, this is the last one I have for you. This one, I actually, I saw it on my phone while I was at work, and I laughed so hard. People thought there was something wrong with me, which there may be, but I was laughing so hard. It's my favorite in the new book. It is flappity puffing.
Yeah, that's the one. That's it. You got that one pronounced correctly.
Okay, good.
That's when they've dozed off to sleep, and sometimes they'll just sort of twitch and moan in their sleep and so on, but sometimes they do this weird sort of flapping of their cheeks, and they'll be sort of breathing in, and as they breathe out, they sort of puff their cheeks out, and their lips will kind of vibrate, and it can be quite noisy. Magic can get quite a high rate of decibels with his puffing. So it's a combination of flapping and puffing, really. Flappity puffing is what we got down here. It's the disconcerting, spluttering, puffing sound generated by a hound's wildly flapping lips as a result of a rapid exhalation of breath. I came up with the idea that it sounds like a duck running rapidly through thick porridge. That'd do it, I think. If stuff did that, it would sound like Zappity Puffing. that's that one.
Well, I am so glad to finally have a word for it.
Yeah, that's, you need the words, don't you?
That's great.
Because, it makes it so much easier when you're communicating with the greyhound owners now, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
You've made it. Our own language.
You've made it all possible. So I told you my favorite from the new book. Do you have a favorite from the new book?
There's a couple, actually. I think that the illustration I like the most in that book is the one called Teefs.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that thing where greyhounds just sort of they grin at you with their teeth showing, and they just look really weird. And I was quite pleased with the way the illustration came out with that.
Yeah.
Because that pretty much captured his stupid sort of face pretty much exactly, I thought. So that weird expression.
Yeah.
The other one was the eight claw clamp down, which is, you know, when they stretch out and. It's a bit like when they do a bow down thing, but they'll do the bow down thing, but they'll put all eight claws onto your feet in the morning just as you get out of bed, and yes. You'll find you suddenly you've got your feet pinned down by these eight nails, which is incredibly painful. But he's good at that. You have to be careful when you get out of bed. What was the other one? Furry prawn.
Oh, that's funny, yeah.
Because basically he looks like a huge furry prawn in certain sleeping positions. that's sort of self-explanatory, that one. But those are my favourites, I think. But Teefs, definitely like Teefs.
Yeah, Teefs.
A lot of people, I call them is Teefs. And a lot of other people did, it seems, as well. Everybody always thought it was just them. But it turns out it's all of us.
It's all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Teefs is very funny. I have one of my greyhounds. He has this very funny overbite, and when he's sleeping, it's very prominent. Like you just see the Teefs, from the top row, and then Felix, who he was rescued from China. He does not have the overbite, but he's always smiling, and you just see like the mouthful of Teefs. Yeah. Very funny.
It's a strange sight, greyhound smile, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, and it makes you smile, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit on you. I was wondering, who are the illustrators that make you laugh?
There's been quite a few. When I was a kid, I used to read a lot of comics. And there's several British cartoonists at the time, way back in about the sort of mid-60s, I suppose, when I was reading anyway. There's a famous comic in the UK called The Beano, which I think has ceased publication now. But in its heyday, there was a cartoonist called Leo Baxendale, and he was brilliant. He would draw there's a strip in there called The Bash Street Kids, which is all these sort of little cartoon school kids and stuff. But he did this. Well, all his cartoons were so funny to look at, really, and his beautiful charm they had, and always made an impression on me. Leo Baxendale's been one of my inspiration, I suppose. Him and there was another Beano artist called Ken Reed, and he worked for Beano, but he also worked for. Him and Baxendale worked for another comic later called Wham, and also Smash and Pow in the 1960s, which I used to collect regularly. And Ken Reed had a beautiful style and fabulously detailed work that he'd do. And the way he would do expressions on people's faces was really good. And you could look at Ken Reed's stuff and you would just laugh at the illustrations, really. You didn't even have to read the script or anything. Just the way he drew was funny. Another person had been sort of more contemporary times, I suppose. I'm very fond of a friend of mine called Tim Harry is very fond of his style, and Tim's he's kind of like a cartooning machine, and he's a fellow professional, and we're all part of the same cartoon organisation. But Tim just he just never stops drawing, and all his work's always funny. And I don't know how he thinks up the stuff, and the amount of stuff he thinks up. Really, he just does. And a lovely economical style that he has too. One other one, well, the last one I'd like to mention is a guy who was the chairman of our cartoonist association, who's sadly died earlier this year. But he was a guy called Noel Ford, and Noel was a cartoonist way back ages ago. Well, he's always been a cartoonist, really, but in his sort of big heyday, he was doing work for, there was a magazine called Punch in the UK, and there was also a famous calendar, which was the Guinness calendar, and he would do cartoons for the Guinness calendar, which is a very prestigious job to get picked to do that at the time.
Wow.
And Noel's cartoons, they were always good, and he was so... He was so accomplished, really. I never saw Noel do a duff gag. It was always funny and always brilliantly well drawn in a very sort of simple, stylish way. And he was a lovely bloke, Noel, too. But that's a small snippet of the people that have served as inspiration for me over the years.
Well, so I'll be sure to look them up because I would love to see their work. I'm not as familiar with the UK illustrators as I am the US ones. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, definitely look up Ken Reed, which is spelled R-E-I-D, and you'll see what I mean there.
Now, what exactly is the cartoonist?
I'm part of a cartoonist organisation called the Cartoonists Club of Great Britain.
Okay.
Which was originally formed back in the 1960s. And it was basically mainly the Fleet Street cartoonists who were working for newspapers at the time. But eventually, Fleet Street has a sort of newspaper publishing area, and that ceased to be. And I don't think there are any newspapers published in Fleet Street anymore. And the number of cartoonists sort of dwindled away as far as newspapers were concerned. But the cartoonists still sort of formed an organisation, and it's kept on going from the 60s until now. And are still flourishing, really. And it's basically a social club for cartoonists, because it's most of us are freelance, so we're working on our own.
Right.
And all sat in rooms on our own trying to be funny. And it's quite nice to get out and meet some others, really.
Sure.
And because obviously we've all got that in common, so we can get together and have a good natter and moan about clients. And drink loads of stuff. And it's they're a great bunch of people out. I made several really good friends through the Cartoonist Club. We used to have... an overseas cartooning convention in Malta. We did that for about 7 years, and that was great as well. We'd all it was just an excuse for you to go on holiday together and look about. We'd all get together and we'd have cartooning competitions amongst ourselves and so on. And it gives us a really good time. We may well organise another one actually next year. I might try and revive it. As I was responsible for it in the first place, I might see if I can organise a few more. But that's what the organisation is. We've got about 200 members, something like that, at the moment.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so important for professionals from different disciplines, especially when most are working freelance, to have that networking resource, you know, where you can compare notes and you can chat with each other and that kind of thing. I mean, I as a writer, I'm not freelance, but as a writer, I know I get a lot out of the other writers that I work with, and you know, comparing notes or asking each other for opinion on our work and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's great. Always good, isn't it? It's actually made quite a lot of difference through my approach to the work, really. It stopped being a kind of isolating experience, really. And you could, like I said, just chat to other people about the stuff you do.
Yeah.
And everybody's always interested in what everybody else is doing as well, you know.
Sure.
A lot of the time you'll speak to people and they'll tell them you're a cartoonist, but they've got no idea of the process that goes into it, or you know, how you go about creating cartoons and drawing them up, that kind of thing. It's nice to speak to people who share the same pain, really.
Right. Or love of art, we'll say.
Yeah, that's it.
So, Rich, I did let folks in my group know, and that's the Candy Cane Rescue USA fundraising group, that I would be interviewing you for the show. And a few of them had questions for you, and I said I would ask them. So here they are. The first one is from a lady named Cheryl McManus, and her question is, when you adopted your first greyhound, what most surprised you about the breed?
Mainly how gentle they were, and how bone idle they were as well, and just how lazy they could be. We expected a sort of a hyperactive racing machine,
right?
And the last thing we expected was this beautiful soft creature that would just lie around on your sofa all day. So that was the most surprising bit,
right? So my next question comes from a lady named Karen Simmons, and she wants to know what advice you would give someone considering the adoption of a greyhound.
I suggest stop considering it and just go and do it. You won't regret it. You really won't. They're beautiful, lovely, gentle, quirky creatures, and they're not what you expect, assuming you've got... any sort of preconceptions about greyhounds, they'll reverse all that, because they're just not like you'd think they would be. They're lovely things, really are. I don't know what it is about them, but they just get under your skin somehow. I mean, we didn't expect it when we got our first greyhound, because we weren't looking for a greyhound as such. We were just looking for a dog, and we found this pitiful specimen in the local dog's trust kennel. Mm. Who came sort of creeping out of the darkness at the back of the kennel and looking pathetic. So I think my wife Jill said, well, if we don't have her, who's going to take this one then? So we adopted her, not knowing what to expect at all. We didn't know anything about greyhounds. We just thought they were big dogs, and we thought, oh, we're going to have to take her out for a lot of exercise, and you know, she'll have to sort of find somewhere really big and run around and that kind of thing. But anything but, really. We got the greyhound back, which we called her Gracie. Mm. And first thing she did when she got in the house, I think, was just go to sleep for a couple of hours. And she was beautiful, and gentle, and just lovely to look at, and no problem at all. So don't think twice about it. Just go and adopt one, and you'll be fine.
You know, I have to say, that is the best answer I've ever heard to this question, which I've heard a lot, which is, what advice would you give someone considering? Just do it. Stop considering. Just do it.
Just get on with it.
Yeah, just get on with it. That's perfect. And I love that you and your wife took pity on the most pitiful.
She was in a miserable state at the time, yeah. She was suffering from mange and fleas, all sorts of stuff. And we thought that she was a kind of chocolatey brown colour, but she had a lot of fur that was in a really bad state. And turned out that it was just badly conditioned fur. And we had to bath her in all kinds of chemicals and stuff to get rid of the sarcoptic mange. And after a couple of months, actually, her proper coat began to show through, and it was this beautiful, deep, velvety black.
Wow.
She was quite stunning, she was. But ever since, so when as soon as we had her for a while, we realised that we'd sort of bonded seriously with this dog, and she was so not dog-like, I suppose.
Right.
And we found that, yeah, there's something about them, isn't there? There's something that, like I said, they get under your skin somehow.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't be without one now, actually. I'd always have another greyhound.
So that brings me to the next question. This one is from Holly McLean, and her question is, what type of food do you feed Magic?
Well, basically, Magic would eat anything, really. If we gave him cardboard in his dish, he'd eat that. But we use, there's a brand of food called James Well-Beloved, which is a sort of dried food. We feed him that. And we mix in a bit of tinned meat as well, which is there's a brand of stuff over here called Butcher's dog food. It's not necessarily made by butchers, that's just the name. And they have some really sort of very lean and sort of not very fatty food there, which is quite good. Mixture of tripe and sometimes chicken, that kind of stuff. And he gets through that at a considerable rate of knots, really. Very food orientated, is Magic.
So the next question is also from Holly, but I think you've answered it. But just to be clear, she wanted to know if you'd ever consider adopting another breed, but it sounds like greyhounds are really where your heart is at.
Yeah, they are really. Greyhounds have got a special place for me now. But no, I'm quite happy to adopt other breeds anyway. I mean, we did have, at one time we had four dogs here. We had we still got the little Jack Russell. We had a Jack Russell cross with a Border Terrier.
Wow.
And we had a Collie cross, and plus a Greyhound. In fact, we got when we had our first Greyhound, because she was so quiet, we thought, oh, there's something wrong with her. We thought she must be ill, because she's not doing much. So we thought, oh, perhaps she needs a bit of company, so we'll get another dog. And so we got this Collie cross, just to sort of liven her up a bit. And that all worked out really well, actually. It didn't liven Gracie up. She was quite happy to sleep around and keep herself quiet and do whatever she wanted to do, really. But became big friends with the Collie cross.
Oh, that's great.
We're just down to Magic and Jack Russell at the moment. So, like I said, there's room for others if I can persuade children.
Well, you know, you could tell her there's more room on that big bed.
Well, yeah, exactly. In fact, greyhounds actually don't take up a lot of room, do they?
They don't, no.
They can be long, but they're quite narrow, so there's not a lot of volume there.
And they don't bark.
Yeah. Quite easy to fit several into a small space.
Okay, so I'm going to sound a little like Kathy Bates here from Misery. I don't mean to, but I'm one of your biggest fans.
good.
I have to tell you, I have my own personal Rich Skipworth gallery in our family room. I love that you tipped your hat to some of the masters of surrealism, impressionism, and some other styles, and you added to them your signature greyhounds, the illustrations that you do, and I think they're brilliant.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I love them. Love them. And when people come over and see them, because they really pop, and I have them all together, and people love them. So are the artists that you paid homage to in this series inspirational to you, or are they among some of your favorites?
The Dali one is, really.
Yeah.
I used to be a big fan of Salvador Dali's work, and so that was a very enjoyable cartoon to do. And that's the main one, who I'm a big fan of, really. I've done, obviously, an Impressionism one, which was, that was quite interesting to draw, actually. Just to get the effect right.
Yeah.
Mainly I was mainly a fan of Dali. The others I just did because I thought I probably could. I could get away with it, and see what they looked like. It's just interesting to do, really. There was a Da Vinci one, wasn't there? It was a Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was, it started off as a sketch, really. It's done on my iPad, and I think we were on holiday at the time, so I was just scribbling, really. I thought, oh, that might work. So I found a copy of the Mona Lisa on Google and copied that a bit. And there was a one which is, a Hand of God one.
Yeah.
Except it's the dog.
Yeah.
And that was quite nice to do as well.
Yeah, they're amazing, and I have a bunch of them in our Skipworth gallery, and my husband is an artist, and he like you, he's a big fan of Dali, Picasso as well. So I got the Dali and Picasso for him, for maybe his birthday or something one year, and he was out of his mind. He loved them so much. He just loved them because he's also a fan, and of yours. So he just loved them, and like I said, they're hanging in the gallery in our home, and when people see them, it's one of the first things people see when they come in. They love them. So yeah, just want to tell you that. But do you have any plans to pay homage to any more masters?
I have. There's a couple I would like to do. The work of Escher?
I'm not familiar with Escher.
Oh, let's see. That's the best way to describe it. He's a guy who draw highly complex illustrations of one sort of like be like something they like a flock of birds as it moved across the page. You'd see that they turned into frogs. That
oh wow!
Thing. And he also did the famous picture of the kind of endless staircase.
Oh yes, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the guy, and always been a big fan of Escher from the days when I used to study science. I was at university studying physics, and one of the things we had to do. was we had to analyze crystal structures by the use of x-rays and so on, and the way crystal structures are arranged can be described mathematically, and there are different kinds of pattern repeats that have mathematical formulae to go with them, and the one lecture we had, the lecturer brought in all these pictures that were been done by Escher to show how the pattern repeated, that kind of thing. And I hadn't sort of seen these before, and I was just stunned by the way he got the pictures to change from one thing to another, and it was just, it was so clever. And I didn't like the fact that they were trying to analyze it with mathematical formulae. Mm. I was too busy looking at the fact that, look, he's made birds turn into frogs. What are you talking about? Well, it's maths. I'm not interested in that. Show me more Escher pictures. I'm going to try and do something like that with Greyhound.
Oh, wow. Oh, that'll be great.
Also, I'd like to do some more Art Nouveau stuff, more Art Nouveau designs, because I was also a big fan of Alphonse Mucha, I think his name was, I think that's how you pronounce it. But he did all these beautiful Art Deco pictures in about the 1900s. And I'm going to try and do some stuff like that. And I've also got I'm a big fan of like railway posters from like 1950s.
Oh, yeah.
That stylized way that illustrations would be made just using flat colors.
Yeah.
And I've every intention of doing a series of those, and so I'll get on with that sometime soon. But that would be quite nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, so we'll expand the gallery. I'm going to have to build an addition.
What else would I do? So I was, the other thing I was going to do is, I've been meaning to do it for a couple of years now. A deck of playing cards, which I was going to call the Pack of Hounds.
Oh!
And when I was a kid, my grandparents had this little pack, it's a two-pack of cards that they got when they were on some ocean liner back in the 20s. and they were made by a company called Ferdinand Piatnik, and they were fabulously illustrated playing cards, and always made a sort of mark in my memory, and I always wanted to keep that sort of in my head for years, always intended to do something like that. But it's only in later years I actually acquired the skill to be able to do it, I think. And a couple of years ago, I did a couple of starting cartoons of Greyhound playing cards. And then other work sort of took over, really, so I kind of shelved that for a bit. But no, I'm going to return to that. Well, next year I'm going to get on with that. And the company that prints the books, they can also produce playing cards as well.
Fantastic.
And we're going to get the whole thing done and have them done up in a sort of a special presentation box, I think, some kind of probably a metal tin with an embossed top, that kind of thing. So it's going to look really quite posh. So that's the other thing I'm going to do. Oh, yes, and the other thing would be sculpture. I've got into making stuff with clay now. Because a while ago, one of the cartoonist events we went to, where we went and did a big cartoon get together on the coast, and it was at a place called Herne Bay in the UK, and there was a number of people there giving workshops and stuff, and there used to be a political satire program in the UK called Spitting Image years ago, and this featured sort of there were, like, that's the best way to describe them, sort of life-size rubber caricatures of politicians, and they would be used in sort of little satirical sketches, and they were quite sort of grotesquely done, which is fair enough, that if it's going to be a politician, you might as well. One of the workshops was being given by one of the guys who used to make these faces and the models and the puppets for Spitting Image.
Oh, wow.
And he went through the whole process of how he did it. And he brought a couple of tons of clay with him and let us all have a muck around with it. And he would make the actual caricature in this modelling clay. And then he would recast it in a kind of rubbery, sort of resiny type stuff. Really quite enjoyed the process of making stuff out of the clay, and I've been doing that lately, and I've got plans to do like sculptured cartoons. Not quite sure it's going to work out, but there's a local company near me who will make bronze casts from your clay sculptures.
Oh, wow.
That sounds quite good, really, so I might give that a go. But yeah, I've got a little sort of clay models all over the place in here at the moment. So that's the next project, I think.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's great. So, Rich, last time you were on the show, you told the story that was just a real wow story about your family crest. And
yeah.
I'm hoping you can share that story again.
I was not quite sure why I looked it up, but I was Googling something, as I was looking for bits and pieces to do with family history at the time, and I found bits and pieces to do with the Skipworth family, and turns out that they were God knows how many hundreds of years ago, they were sort of fairly important nobles in the north of England, and there's a town up in the north of England called Skipwith, which was the original family name, and it became sort of corrupted over the years to Skipworth, and also I think Skipton was another variant of it. But some of the there's a Skipworth Hall up there, or a Skipwith Hall, and there used to be the Earl of Skipwith. He was somehow connected to Henry VIII and that kind of thing, and anyway, I found that there was a Skipworth family crest, and to my surprise, it was a black greyhound, and above three horizontal red bars on a shield, and that was a bit spooky at the time.
Yeah,
I thought it must be running in the family genes. I've I've been connected to greyhounds.
Well, absolutely. It's just so funny. There he was, magic, in your family crest.
It could have been him.
That's just fantastic.
I don't know, around about the time of Henry VIII or slightly before.
Wow.
Quite surprising, that.
Yeah, I love that story. And I know there's an illustration of the family crest in your first book, if people want to see that. Yeah, it's really cool. And it's just a great story. So, Rich, I know you gave us ideas on some of the things that you are looking forward to start work on. Do you have anything coming up that we'll be able to see in the near future, or any appearances that folks can meet you at?
I haven't got anything planned at the moment, but I do quite a lot of stuff with the Greyhound Trust in the UK.
Sure.
And they often invite me along to their stuff. They're going to be at Crufts again in the new year, and so I'll probably be appearing on their stand there.
Great.
That all went very well last time when I was behaving like a celebrity and signing books and doing cartoons of people's greyhounds for them.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be appearing at Crufts sometime next year. And I'll also be turning up at some sort of Candy Cane event at some point, I would think.
Fantastic.
But at the moment, that's it. There's no other personal appearances planned, but the people from Greyhound Trust will often get me to turn up at stuff. Because I've become sort of quite involved with them now. So stay tuned for more news, really.
Yep.
Any chance of sort of appearing in public, I'll announce on Facebook, really.
Great.
Just keep an eye out.
Yes, we'll definitely keep an eye. And I know, speaking of Candy Cane Rescue has coming up, I think in the next couple of weeks, they are going to be raffling off a quilt illustrations of magic. I know I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to get my tickets for that.
That's the second one they've done.
And, yeah.
The first one went really well. I remember I was there drawing the winning ticket to the Candy Cane event.
Oh, nice. And,
in the pouring rain, if I remember right.
Oh, boy.
But it was a good event, that was. I like that one.
Rich, I'm so grateful to you for coming on the show. It's truly an honor and an absolute delight to talk to you. And even more, I thank you for all the laughs and the good humor and for all you do to help Greyhound adoption organizations, including Candy Cane, the Greyhound Trust, all over the world. You're making a significant positive difference in the lives of people and Greyhounds, and I thank you for that.
Yeah, I didn't expect that at the time when I first started doing the cartoons and so on. I just did them for the sake of doing them, really. And then, bit by bit, I realised that we would be able to raise some money for the hounds as well, just by doing the cartoons and stuff. And so I'm quite pleased with the way that's turned out, really. We've managed to raise quite a lot of money, actually, over the past few years. And, we intend to carry on doing the same sort of thing, really. Especially with the books, they can be they're available for sort of bulk orders, really, about a 33% discount, and organisations then sell them on and raise funds that way. And I know Greyhound Trust have done really well out of that so far. I'm amazed how that's gone, really. No one more surprised than me how the success of these cartoons has been. And I'm more than happy to use them to raise funds to help the hounds as well.
Yep, and we in the USA, we have been selling them to raise funds to help offset the transport expenses for Candy Cane Rescue dogs saved from the China meat trade. And I'm not surprised that we've done well, in sales, because your work is it makes people laugh, and they can see their own dogs in the cartoons, and they see themselves. And in this world, you have a gift that helps others get through it all. So,
I seem to have hit on something here, really.
Yes. Yeah.
I was amazed at how popular greyhounds were, and the thousands of people that are now following me. I'm quite stunned by that, quite humbled by it, really. And I'm very pleased with that.
Yep.
So, I'm going to keep on doing that for quite a long time now, I think.
Good, good. On behalf of your fans, I say good. We're very grateful for that. So for everyone listening, in the show notes of this episode, you'll find links to where you can get Rich Skipworth's Greyhound Glossary 2, the 2020 calendar, and while supplies last, copies of the first Rich Skipworth's Greyhound Glossary. You'll also find in the show notes a link to Rich's Red Bubble store, and there you can get all sorts of really cool items. You can get prints, canvas prints, t-shirts, blankets, and more. I'd mentioned that I have prints from Rich's series of the Masters with the greyhounds woven in there, and that's where I got them framed as well. Fabulous quality from that store, by the way, Rich. Really good.
They are good quality, aren't they?
Yeah, very high quality.
I'm quite impressed with them.
Yeah, because
It took me a while to work out a decent company that would do proper work, really.
Yeah.
There's lots of print-on-demand companies, and they're not all the same. Redbubble turned out to be one of the best ones I've found so far.
Yeah, very. I've ordered canvas prints, frame prints, T-shirts, sweatshirts, blankets from your shop, and all of them very high quality, both in the items and the actual printing. So really well
done.
I'm glad
they've gone down well.
Yes.
The latest sort of venture I've done is I've been uploading work to a couple of companies that produce fabrics as well. There's a company called Spoonflower.
Oh, sure.
And there's one in the UK called Woven Monkey. I'll send you links to that as well, so you can, so people can go and find fabrics if they want to make stuff themselves.
Fantastic. I will definitely put that in the show notes as well, along with Redbubble's link to your shop. And also, I will be putting a link to Rich's website. There is a page there that you can link directly to, listing links for wherever you are in the world where you can get Rich's latest book and also the calendar. And I will also include links to Rich's website as a whole, his Twitter feed, his Facebook page, and please, please follow him on social media. You will smile at his posts. They are so fun, and it's fun to watch you, Rich, and your success.
And thank you.
And again, I thank you so much for being on today's show.
No, that's no problem. Thank you for the advertising of all my stuff on your show notes as well. That's really good of you.
Of course. For the About Greyhounds podcast, this is Jacqueline Howard. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.